All right, let me just confirm. Jed, are you back with us?
I am. I made it.
All right, very good. So to the start, let's roll. This is the start of our MediaBiz Power Hour, an educational teleseminar for those of you in the media ad space, whether you're selling ads into your publication, your newspaper, your city magazine, your niche or niche specialty publication, you're in the right spot. Whether your circulation is free or paid or controlled, you're also in the right spot. And if you're talking about selling ads into print, your e-newsletter, or onto your website, you're also in the right spot. Thank you so much for being here. As we're getting settled in, we're always going to encourage you to close your office door, try to find a quiet spot to really be able to listen and make notes of the things that we are sharing with you. It's not an accident that there is not something on your screen which would simply create many or multitasking. All of the very best in adult research and learning simply says the more notes you make, the more notes you take, we simply transfer or infuse the knowledge to you, which we consider the coach and coaching approach. So the more notes you make and take, the more you'll be able to take these strategies and utilize and deploy them immediately following our educational teleseminar. With me is Jed, the CEO and founder of MediaBiz. We've been hosting these teleseminars for a decade plus together. Jed, how about some opening words about MediaBiz and what's cooking in your world? I'll say a quick introduction about Power Hour, and then we'll launch into our topic about brand and branding today, okay?
Great. Well, first of all, thank you, Ernest. Ernest does a great job with these teleseminars. I always learn a lot, and he has an enormous amount of experience when it comes to publishing and and sales. So, like I said, I always learn a lot, and it's always very educational for me. Even though I've been in this world for a long time, for about 25, 30 years. So, I am the president of MediaBiz. We are a company that is devoted to driving print ad revenue to newspapers and magazines. We work with a variety of national advertisers. And right now we're sort of focused on the holiday ads. We just sort of began our holiday ads campaigns today, which is exciting for us. What we do, sort of unlike anyone else out there, is we track the phone numbers for print ads that we put into print publications. So we are able to tell exactly how publications are performing, and what we find is that publications are able to generate phone calls and sales at a rate that really no other medium can compete with. So we tell that story all day long to advertisers, and we are firm believers that print can produce very valuable sales, very valuable response, and be a important part of any company's media plan. If you have any questions or like to contact me after the call, I'm always around at MediaBiz. We're always looking to talk to more publications, and if you're using us, thank you, and look forward to learning on the teleseminar today.
Mm-hmm. And as you listen to Jed speak about MediaBiz, they literally place ads in tens of thousands of magazines, have hundreds of thousands of ads that they've purchased, millions and millions of inbound leads and prospects, and thus the sales and revenue generated for and with their media publications. I truly believe, Jed, that you and your team sit at the most unique keyboard in the world, that you can see the ads on the right and you can see the response on the left. And I always love your insight and always appreciate our working together. So thank you so much. For all of you, very briefly, my introduction. My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began, like so many of you, in the advertising sales industry, but I go all the way back to the middle 80s, right? So launched three of my own publications. I do remember what it was like to be a rough and tumble startup, an entrepreneur, an office of one, and then office of two. Could you imagine that? And even an office of three, four, and five. I remember all of that as I rolled up my publications. But then I was also a leader in a billion-dollar media group. So you can only imagine, I saw corporate boardrooms, and I saw the very best of the best of publicly held companies, and I saw a space where you didn't miss your quarterly numbers by $1, literally not by $1. That's how tight it was, and half my compensation was tied to that. And as a company, if we missed our quarterly numbers by $1, it cost us $250,000 back three decades ago. So you get my sense on that side. I understood what it meant to work in a pressure cooker. You projected your numbers and you delivered your numbers. Over the last 24 years, we've coached and guided more than 2,700 ad sales teams, companies, and organizations in 14 time zones around the world. September, October, we typically move back and forth around the United States, working with our media clients. Today, we're on the West Coast in San Francisco. Our corporate offices are in Park City, Utah, where the Olympics were and the ski resorts are. And then in April, May, we're in the UK and Europe and working with our media clients overseas on that side. So bottom line is we love to walk, talk, and breathe the media space. Very briefly, the goal for today, and every single time we have a teleseminar, we have a goal of three goals or three small goals. Number one, we hope to share new ideas. We want to stretch and spur your thinking. Number two, our second micro goal is to confirm that if there's something you hear from myself or Jed that matches what you're already doing, we send you a virtual high five, simply meaning that it matches the very best and best practices. And then the third micro goal for today is the serendipitous. If you hear something that Jed shares or that I say, and it sparks something else either related to this topic or the serendipitous unrelated to this topic, we love that as well. So three micro goals tied to what we're going to be talking about. So Jed, today we're going to, the topic today, something we've never done over the last 10, 11, 12 years. We're going to talk about brand and branding and the topic about linking our media brand to profitability. And so let's start and talk about some of the key indicators that tie into a media brand. And actually, Jed, this really correlates to you and your world, because we sort of kick off and think about who are the readers of that particular publication, newsletter, or website, right? Who's reading what and why is always the starting point of a strong media brand. And then from there sort of comes the, you know, what is the ad focus, right? So the ad focus could be what? Apartments for rent or homes for sale or RV dealers. It could be a city magazine on the Pulse or a business journal, whatever that might be. Matching up the advertisers to the right readers is certainly part of that brand and being able to articulate that story. And there's more behind that, right? Who is that readership and why, and how has that grown, and what are the demographics and psychographics? And then from there, what are the advertisers, and how do those advertisers tie in and correlate back and forth? We look for the relationship between those. And then the third piece, Jed, which is, of course, near and dear to your heart, I'll pause for a moment, called ad results as part of our brand and branding. So, Jed, you have a little exposure to ad results from media companies, yes?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's on the brand and branding piece. I mean, one thing which is really interesting is that publications, you know, by and large do a lousy job of sort of defining who their readers really are. You know, oftentimes it's very generic, you know, based on kind of the census data, for example, that's available within their readership. But the more you can understand your readers and the more you can understand what your readers are responding to, the easier it becomes to sell ads. And so this ties into the tracking of ads. And one of the things that I'm sort of contractually obligated to mention on every single phone call is that, you know, what we do here at MediaBiz is we track the ads that we put into newspapers and magazines, by and large, using a unique 800 number. This is a cheap, easy way of doing it. For those of you who don't know, an 800 number is essentially a transparent pass-through, so you can see data based on the information from the caller. You can see how long they spent on the phone, how many people called a certain phone number, what time of day they called. You can see these basic pieces of information, which may not give you sort of a definitive conclusion as to whether or not the ad was successful, but it gives you a very, very good idea, right? With a few simple follow-up questions to an advertiser, you can get a really good idea whether or not an ad is performing well. And so when it comes to figuring out your brand and figuring out what it is that your readers are responding to, you know, tracking is just so critical because you're able to see exactly which ads people are responding to. Do your readers want walk-in bathtubs, or are they more interested in ordering, you know, gifts for relatives? You know, are they interested in, you know, in cable television, or are they more interested in, you know, in satellite television? I mean, there's a million questions, but by capturing that data, you're able to articulate to advertisers not just who your readers kind of are, but what they want and what they're most likely to respond to, which is a very, very valuable way to sell. It's an easy way to sell, right? You're not really selling audience as much as you're selling response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so what Jed is talking about all links up together. It's so much a brand and branding, Jed, is this continual circle, right? It's not a triangle and it's not a zigzag line. It's a continual circle that, let's see, if I get my readership right and I have it being seen by the right people and therefore I've got the right ads focus, and then it comes back around, in comes the ad results. And then if I continue that circle, where's my distribution circulation to put my publication, my newsletter, my website in the flow, right, of the right readership? It's just this continual circle. And that's probably the most important part. Jed, about 2 weeks ago, I taped a 10-minute presentation for a media group that was meeting in Florida. And in that video, I brought along a burlap bag on one hand and a ball of string, which you've heard me use that visual before. And in that video, I said, look, here's a ball of string, and that's all it is, just a ball of string, and that string holds nothing, right? But then over here, my other hand is a burlap bag. You know, what is a burlap bag? String that is woven back and forth and back and forth. And if you do it right, you have what? Something really strong. And I threw a ball in the burlap bag to say, look, remember, this is strong. It's, you know, but unravel one of those strings and then another string. Guess what? It's back to a ball of string in my left hand, which means it's nothing, right? And the world of media and branding and marketing is this continuous circle. And it's a circle because we do not break that circle. Everything's got to be synced up. So let's continue down the path. We've touched on readership. We've touched on the ad focus, right? We've touched on ad results. Distribution circulation, whether you have, your circulation is free, paid, or controlled, whatever your approach is part of your magic. Make it the best it can be, right? For some of our media groups, it's to expand that visibility. In some cases, it's to contract it and make it even more concentrated and more focused. And both strategies work depending on where you are from that perspective. Remember, too, that to link up in your branding, your print, your newsletter, your website footprint, all of those things, your social media, all of those things have to be nice and tight on that side. Also, let's not skip over association visibility. Some of you actually sent us questions about that, and we'll be addressing that, but your association visibility. So if I'm selling ads to RV dealers, surely I'm a member of what? The dealer of the Association of RV Dealers. I go to their meetings. I go to their luncheons. I sit on their board of directors. I run their committees. I'm at their trade shows, right? I may also be doing what? I might be speaking as a keynote at one of their luncheons. I might be writing for their e-newsletter or posting it in their blogs. I might have a book that I might talk about, literally marketing for RV dealers, right? I might have done industry surveys, I might be drafting a white paper. This is the part about thought leadership, but this is also about brand and branding. If you want to know the easiest way to sell more ads and sell them more profitably, be the go-to, be the main source, of which we'll talk about in a little bit, but be the main source in your space and sector, because in general, most of your competitors are selling from a transactional level. Hi, I'm Ernest. Jed, would you like to buy an ad? Gulp. Kerplunk. gee, I'm just a transaction, right, Jed? That's it. There's no connection. There's no relationship there. That's
right.
All that is, which is how most of the competitors. But Jed, in reverse, if I come through and say, Jed, I'd like your opinion on a white paper. We have an industry survey we're doing. Gee, Jed, I'm going to be speaking at your next luncheon. I'd like to share with you some of the things that we've learned. Gee, we've made other observations about the RV sector. I have a book that I've written about that. You pause and go, Ernest, I don't think we've talked yet about the media space you got going on. Yeah, that's part of it. By the way, we know how to drive ad results. We know how to track the results. We've got the perfect readership. Circulation's all tied in. I'll come back to that because I know that's what the rest of the transactional people are selling in the RV space, but I got a whole lot more to share with you, okay? And that's the essence about brand and branding and elevates you above everybody else. And we mesh this into our presentation, our websites, our emails, our trade show, our marketing. And the bottom line is, and we're going to open up with one of the questions right out of the gate, but the bottom line is this strategy of brand and branding means that the ant outruns the elephant, that you, the smaller, can outrun the larger, which takes us right to one of our questions that came in from John in Alabama, who says, how can my small weekly newspaper in Alabama be successful or be even more successful? And that's exactly why, John, you're here. And it's exactly what our approach is, that small and well done can be absolutely laser. I'm going to give you a quick example, and maybe, Jed, you might have one as well. But our corporate offices, John, are based in Park City, about 6,000 people. If you build out the county, maybe it's 20,000. There's 1.3 million in Salt Lake, right? The Salt Lake paper comes in every Sunday, kind of force delivered. I never read it, and there's no readership, and there's no advertising in Park City. Why? Because the ant called the Park Record that only comes out twice a week has everything I need. It has everything in the community. It's got wonderful pictures of all the kids and kiddos. It tells me what's going on, that's happening. It tells me the important issues and meetings I want to be at. It's a perfect example. So, John, to your question, can the small outperform the large? Absolutely, in aces, but everything we cover here are vitally important for you to deploy, like that burlap bag example. Do you have any comment for John related to small and tight and crisp can be powerful?
Sure. I mean, one of the really interesting things that we see when we're looking at data from publications all across the country is that there is an enormous difference in the response rates that are generated from publications that are very, very similar when it comes to circulation, when it comes to the demographics that they're serving. And there's this intangible thing that some publications have and others don't. And it's just how I think how enthusiastically the ads that are in there are read, or the whole publication is read. I think that there are, I think that small publications can do extremely well with advertisers, because they're delivering content which is really not available anywhere else. I think that, some of the most disappointing publications we deal with tend to be larger regional publications that have large circulations but don't have sort of the readership following that, that smaller publications do. So, to Ernest's point, I mean, I think that there's no shame in serving a relatively small audience very, very well. I mean, that's basically what's gone on online. Now, there's a website for a Twitter account, an Instagram account for every possible sort of type of person you can imagine. The same has happened on TV, right? I mean, in cable, for example, if you're interested in cars, there's a channel for you. If you're interested in animals, there's a channel for you, right? I mean, it's become so segmented, but they've been able to make it work by sort of rooting out advertisers that are specific to that audience. And I think with publications, it's much the same, much the same can be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Here's the counterpoint to that, John, and then we'll wrap this part of the question up. Last night on Jimmy Kimmel, Kimmel was Jennifer Aniston, right, from Friends. She launched Instagram, put up a single picture, and something like, 2 million followers in 2 minutes. It's basically the world's record for the fastest ramp up of how many millions or in how many minutes. I mean, let's all agree that we're not Jennifer, right? And we're not famous like Friends, right? So the bottom line is, be who you're going to be. Don't apologize. Jed, you said it spot on. Don't apologize. Be the best at who you can be. Let's take another question. Max in Pennsylvania says, I have several sections of my paper that others don't. How can I use that effectively to brand my paper even more? Max, that's a beautiful story. That's another example and a continuation of small and tight and crisp is great. If you went out and said, I want to launch the magazine for all engineers, let's call that the ocean, you would have more success saying it's for engineers that have red hair, that are left-handed, that are based in Boise, Iowa. That you could be that specific, and those engineers really can't wait to read what you have to say and what it is you're going to share. There's so much more power in small and tight and crisp. So, Max, again, a great question from that perspective. Let's take just one more, and then we'll dive back into our topic. Jeremy in Colorado says, does sponsoring nonprofit organizations help brand recognition? So let's comment on that two ways. And Jeremy, we're going to say more about that a little bit later on. But two things. One, sponsoring and working within the associations that relate to where your advertisers are, that's the key point. On the other side, charitable organizations, let's take something like Habitat or an MS Walk or something else like that, are very good for client entertaining. You can invite your advertisers or prospective advertisers to join you and your team. It's a really nice branding of your work in the community and that you care and that you involve them. In reverse, we encourage you as a media group to also participate in the charitable or community events hosted by your advertisers and your clients on that side. It's a wonderful door opener. It builds wonderful bridges, okay? So, again, we'll keep fielding those questions. Send them to us. Hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here or send them to ernest@powerhour.com and my team will pull those in and we'll keep navigating those. Jed, let's continue on the second part of what we said we'd cover. How does brand and branding give you an advantage when selling against competitors? Okay, so let's go down this path. What's the first advantage? It is fun to have the wind at your back. In my corporate sales days, Jed, we had a bell. A big bell, right? That was hung in the conference room. And every time somebody generated a sale or got a renewal, guess what would happen? Down the hall to ring the bell. And it was the ring of success or an outside salesperson that had been out all day that had come back in. It's the end of the day. Down the hall, ring, 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 the ring of success. Everybody rally around and we knew that something great had happened. It is fun when you have such a strong brand that when you are the mainstay and other competitors are being removed or other competitors are being cut from an ad budget, they would never consider removing you. Okay? That's the key piece that we're talking about. You are the mainstay, and that's what brand and branding does from that perspective. It also gives you the confidence to go into a meeting. So often in sales, Jed, we hear the words, oh, you know, we close, 20%. We go off for five meetings and we close one in five. We get two of five. What is that? We go in to close every single meeting, every single presentation, and our confidence that comes with that. And that's vitally important that it's like, again, the wind that's at our back. We expect to win. That's what a strong brand and branding means, right? It also means better team retention, which also means better advertiser retention. There's that gentle tension of, hey, honestly, yeah, of course I'm going to be renewing that ad. And by the way, thank you so much. Hey, last quarter, you really saved my bacon. I know I dropped the ball on the deadline. Thank you for working with me. There's that the tension that says, hey, thank you so much for guiding my team or helping us with our tracking. I'll never forget that piece. Or thanks for reaching out. You knew I had been under the weather, and I know you had your office, deliver chicken soup, to my home. I'll never forget that. There's that gentle personal relationship, that exists, Jed. That simply means that when you have team retention, you have advertiser retention, you have the underbelly of those stories that link us together. The reverse is true, though, when you have team turnover and the loss of team members. Suddenly, it's just Sally who's stepping in behind me. I was there for 10 years. Sally steps in and goes, hi, Lucy, you want to renew that ad? No, thanks. Okay, goodbye. Because Sally doesn't have all that back history. And it's a subtle point that we often skip over when we think about what tenure means and what advertiser tenure means on the other side and the relationship to that. Any thoughts or observations, Jed, related to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a difficult thing to navigate, right? Because you want to, you want stability, right? Stability sort of breeds all of these sort of, you know, welcome side effects that you just mentioned. You know, on the other hand, right, I mean, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. I mean, you know, sometimes some turnover can also change things, because in the same way that there's advertisers who salespeople build up a relationship with, there's also advertisers that salespeople just don't mesh with for whatever reason, right? They just, you know, they don't solicit them as enthusiastically as maybe they do other people, because there's a feeling that they don't like them, and it just sort of spirals downward. And then, you know, invariably you get a new sales rep and they walk in not knowing any better to the business that hasn't advertised in years, and all of a sudden they're a new customer, right? So it's it can kind of go both ways, but I guess the trick is kind of establishing a culture that sets up expectations across kind of generations.
You do make a valid point, and that may be a topic for an upcoming teleseminar, which is, when is it the right time to rotate accounts, how often that we do that, and so forth. And that may be something that we might pick up. That might be, I'm going to make a note about that. When is time to rotate? And there's a lot of interesting questions about that, and we can talk about that. I've matched up male to male buyers, female to male, female to female. We've matched up buyers. We've done it based on retention. We've done it based on ability with prospects to open doors or not, and where there's roadblocks. There's a number of strategies that tie to that. So maybe, and I don't think we've ever covered that slice of account management and account relationships. So thank you for that. Okay. The other piece, just in general, about the advantage against selling against our competitors is that most of your competitors, because they're so immersed in the transactional piece and because they don't get and understand the power of brand and branding, they just lean back and go, yeah, you know, every meeting I go into, you know, I do my best to get that ad sale. But, you know, I'm competing over there with, you know, the Blue Media Group, and the Blue Media Group is, you know, everybody knows them, and everybody, you know, everyone loves them, and everyone in that magazine or website's been there forever, and I just hope that I'll get a piece of a budget. Literally, gang, if you're doing this right, that's what your competitors are saying about you. Or in reverse, you pause and go, actually, Ernest, no, that's what I'm saying about my competitors. Well, guess what? They're eating your lunch, because you're on the transaction side, they're on the relationship side, and if you wonder what's happening, that's what's happening. What's going on in this call is what they're doing over there. All right. For those that we work with, and for those that we have coached and guided for two decades, we have always used this approach, always as an absolute. We've never wavered on it. That's what this. It's all about the relationships from that side. Let's field another question, and then we'll move forward. There was a question that came in from let's see. Oh, it's about social media. Pat in Texas says, how about handling the response, I get a better ROI with social media than print? And that is kind of one of these reoccurring themes. So, Pat, I'm going to open up with these words. For the past month, I've been working with a particular company, a particular media group, and a particular sales group. We meet for 15 minutes every single morning, 7:30 a.m. their time. We're done by 7:45. Why do we do that before 8 o'clock? We're respecting buying time versus selling time. Buyers can buy from 8 to 5. We can work on our strategies round the clock, right? So we do it before the lights go on, right? And we just got to have this conversation about social media. When I literally said, hang on, step back for a second. Have you actually looked at their social media? Have you looked to see the last time they made a post on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn? How frequently are they making those posts? Have you actually noticed? Take, for example, you'll hear, oh, we're on Facebook and that's our source. Great. Go take a look and see how many followers they have. go look to see how many likes or comments. You'll be stunned to see in most cases, there's almost nothing. Crickets. Why? Because of throttling. What is throttling? Google for Facebook throttling, and you'll read about it. It began 4 years ago. When you make a post on your personal page and you show your little son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, 10,000, you get likes and you get comments and engagement. Try to do that on your business side. Crickets. You'll get two likes, no comments, and you go, what's the difference? That's Facebook not giving you the opportunity to get visibility. That also means your advertisers are not getting visibility on that side. Do not let an advertiser blow smoke at you related to social media. If they do, and if that objection is a challenge for you, advertisers are winning and you're not driving sales. And there's very specific step-by-step strategies how to address social media, how to address a Google AdWords, how to address what's happening on the digital side that you're competing against. Jed, any comments on that before we go further?
Yeah, I mean the easiest way to combat social media is to dig into the numbers and to ask advertisers for any information they have about the actual sales that are being produced. Because I think what you're going to find is that it is almost unmeasurable. I mean, I'm of the belief that, you know, that a lot of these metrics that get thrown around are really bordering on almost fraudulent, because they make the numbers so much sound so much bigger and better than they really are. But when the truth of the matter is that the number of clicks that generate actually turn into sales is such a small percentage that any time and effort and money that they're spending on their social media accounts, right, is coming back at such a high rate of return that I think that they would be shocked. So as I mentioned earlier, one of the things we do at MediaBids is try to track every ad. You know, one of the things that we find, and I've shared this number in other teleseminars, but on average in print, the close rate, right, the rate between people who are responding to an ad versus the rate of people who are buying is somewhere in the neighborhood of 40%, 40%, right? There is on social media, you know, the rate of return is almost unmeasurable, and it comes in, you know, usually somewhere in the rate in the realm of about 0.02%, right? I mean, it's so small that it is just shocking. Now, the volume that they get is enormous, right? You can get, like Ernest alluded to, you know, you can get, you know, 10,000 people liking a picture, But the number of people who are actually willing to take it a step further and follow through on a transaction and make a purchase is incredibly small. So I would, you know, for advertisers who are telling you that, you know, social media is what's working for them and they don't need print, you know, it's I would challenge them to try to do some minimal amount of tracking, right? How many of those views or clicks are actually generating a sale? You know, that being said, there are some types of businesses, like if I was having a, you know, a music festival, right? I mean, that maybe are not quite as sort of, you know, response based. They're more sort of informative. You know, obviously, you know, social media can work great for those things, but that doesn't mean that that print can also work great. So, but when it comes to actually selling a service or product and actually getting someone to buy, you know, print is really unparalleled.
You're absolutely right. And even the tying into Google AdWords, for example, the specific question, what is your spend? The specific question of, do you know what you're spending per click? Do you know how many clicks you're getting, right? Do you know how many of those clicks are turning into sold deals? Are you able to track any of those ads or clicks back to a toll-free number to define the measurement? You start to walk down these questions and the advertiser says, no one's ever asked me that, or I wasn't even aware of that. You know, boy, you've really opened up my eyes. Let me tell you some more. Let me share with you more. The moment you do that, you've crossed the Rubicon. You've crossed the river from transaction to relationship. They're asking you for your professional insight. They're asking you for your media guidance. Your brand just went from transaction, want to buy an ad, to relationship, can you please help me? And you do, okay? And that is the crossing of that moment. That's exactly where it happens. Let's continue. Let's talk about specific strategies that will strengthen your sales culture related to branding, and there's lots of them. So we're going to share those with you that will spark and spur your thinking. Take the ones that work for you, add the ones that you're not, consider the additional ones that you might incorporate from given the size of your team and your organization. And we realize we have those of you that are very small on one side and those of you very large on the other. So sift and sort the things that matter most. But when we talk about sort of brand and branding within media companies, we want to show that we care. We want to share with our team that we care and it matters. We want to respect the others. We want to make certain that we focus on what we call the four P's. What is the purpose tied to the strong culture that we want within our organization? The second P, what is our process to get there? People is the third P, and performance the fourth. Tying all of the four P's in together, that's where we tie in the cultural component related to your sales and selling organization, okay? All of those pieces. And then just sort of the support, Jed, think about where we were in the media space 25 years ago, 30 years ago, where I was talking to this Yellow Page executive that was literally telling me how she grew media sales in Yellow Pages from 20 million to 200 million. You know, and in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, my God, that was Candyland days where advertisers would chase you out the door to give you a check because they didn't want to miss the deadline for the Yellow Pages, right? I mean, it was easy peasy in those days. You had a Yellow Page ad, and you had a newspaper ad, maybe a magazine ad. That was it. That was the total sum of how you drew your biz, right? Of course, the world has changed. So create a culture. And even if you're a team of one, or a team of five, or seven, or 77, or 777. It doesn't matter. You need to be green and growing. Jed and I are. We not only are leaning in and paying attention to the things that are happening in our world and the things that are changing. Jed, look at the news that we swap back and forth about USA Today. Watching that from the earliest days of could it ever happen? Right. Could there ever be a national, to some of the news that we saw more recently related to, we watch what moves in our space. Jed and I are green and growing and ever adapting and ever changing to what moves in our marketplace. So we want you as an individual, then you as a company, to have what? An attitude of gratitude, an attitude that we're always going to be evolving from that perspective. Okay? So let's talk about some of the strategies. Number one, as a collective group and within your team, you need an open way for your team to share feedback and good ideas to let them know that their opinion matters. That's how we create a sales culture of green and growing, which links right up to what? Our branding on the other side. We tie this all together. Number two, again, depending on the size of your team, you need a place for a person to be able to anonymously share something that's not going right or something they're seeing that is either hurtful, damaging, wrong, illegal, whatever that might be. You can go as dark as you want or as simple as, look, I just think we're working with the wrong printer, whatever that might be from that perspective. Number three, we also believe in 360-degree reviews rather than just individual reviews. We believe in individual reviews as well, but we do like the 360 from that perspective. Number four, part of creating a strong brand and a strong culture within your company is the use of advertiser surveys and team surveys, two different kinds of surveys. Advertiser surveys are something, Jed, that we've done other teleseminars on. Advertiser surveys literally means at least once or twice a year, we're asking our advertisers for their feedback on some aspect of what we're doing, our editorial focus, where their leads are coming from, other work within the sector, white papers that we might be thinking about. We are constantly asking them. That's part of our brand. Do not think you can be over here in a silo figuring out everything that is the best for the marketplace. Ask your advertisers there on the pulse. Also, tie in your prospective advertisers, which means you get the opportunity for a selling opportunity at the same time that you're tying them into industry surveys. This is part of our branding. We're a relationship. We're not a transaction. Okay? Let's also tuck in Whenever we're working around our sales culture and sales performance, tie in incentives for your team. These are ideas or strategies they might share that might improve our sales performance, improve our sales results, improve our readership. Tie in financial incentives where that makes sense as well. We're also believers, related to your sales culture and your branding, that we watch closely what's happening with your direct competitors. What shifts are they making in response to your strategies? Where are there things that they are overachieving and you're not? Where are they delivering 5-star and you're 2-star, right? And therefore, we have to what? Shift and change and either A, match what they're doing, or B, which is always our strategy, exceed what they're doing, okay? So watch what's happening with your direct competitors. Watch also, though, the companion to this is watch what's happening in the media space. Watch what's happening. So take, for example, the Salt Lake Tribune that gets forced thrown on my driveway every single Sunday, even though I don't pay for it and I don't subscribe to it. If I were selling for the local park record, the Ant, right, 6,000, compared to 1.2, 1.3 million on the Cirque side, I'd be out with my camera or my phone, taking pictures of my camera every single Sunday, going up and down the driveways, going, here's examples of all the newspapers that sit out there. By Sunday afternoon, no one's even going out to pick them up. Why is that? Because they're not reading it. So why are you advertising with them when you should be advertising with me? Remember, I'm the Ant, but in Park City, I'm the biggest elephant in this market, and the Salt Lake Tribune will never touch what we're doing here from that perspective. So watch what's happening related to your direct competitors. I'm also a believer, Jed, in watching what's happening in other nearby spaces. So let's just step back for a second. If I were selling ads to RV dealers, I would be watching what the RV manufacturers are doing with their sales and their marketing and their branding to the dealers and to the consumers, because I might learn something. If I were selling ads to chiropractors, I might be watching what the companies are doing who sell products or services to chiropractors. I'm a big believer, Jed, in sort of watching the nearby, because they may teach me something. Jed, does that make sense from your perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, the more you know about what the goals of your advertisers are, right, the easier it is to try to come up with a plan that's going to work for them. It's sort of tying back to what we began the discussion about, you know, in terms of understanding the brand that your publication represents and understanding the audience that it's serving. Because if you're able to understand the audience well, right, now you can fit what the goals of an advertiser really are that much better. But you have to understand the goals, right? It has to be, you know, in any business, right, it's always going to be more specific than you think. So, for example, in the case of RVs, it may not be just people who are looking to go on vacation this summer. Maybe it's retirees. Maybe it's people who are, you know, looking for a second home and that they can, you know, that's mobile. I don't know that much about that business, but I'm sure the more you get into it, the more you can sort of figure out ways that what they're trying to achieve, you know, could apply to your readers. Maybe, for example, a vacation advertiser that you have that you know who does well, maybe that kind of data is relevant to share with an RV dealer, because it turns out they're kind of going after the same people, you know, that type of thing.
Just using those examples, for example, if I learned from maybe my industry surveying or white paper work, if I learned that the buyers of RV were skewing older, I might create a strategic alliance with a senior living publication that they would drop ads into their newsletter, their website, or even in their publication about what we're doing on the RV side. And I would be more than happy to showcase back and forth the senior living visibility with my audience on that side. There's one example. Or another example, if I were watching what was happening with the makers of the manufacturers of RVs, I might partner with them and say, hey, can you call out from your database inquiries that are coming in my geographical area? I'd like to cross market to them. And then I'd also like to feed those leads back to RV dealers. Guess what? I have a new pipeline that the RV dealer's going, holy smokes, I couldn't get access to that. You are, that's amazing, Ernest. You are a mainstay. Everybody else comes in here to sell an ad, and you're actually helping us work with buyers. Another example. Here's another piece. What if I learned that those that wanted to buy an RV were willing to drive X number of hours or X number of miles or kilometers to go sample all the different dealers and dealerships? What would that do for me? I'd come back to my RV dealers locally, and our ads would focus on the five reasons, the three reasons, the seven reasons why working with a local RV dealer is advantageous. Because I've learned that if people are willing to shop and go hours and hours and hours away to buy, there's some downside to that. Maybe, but when you buy local, we give you priority service. When you buy from afar, you're in a second tier of service. Person goes, wow, gulp. I went 10 hours to go buy that RV, but now you're telling me 3 weeks before I can get, you know, an oil change, or I've got to go back to that dealer. What the heck? Why didn't I buy from you up front? That's the mindset that we want to create from that perspective. So again, we're talking about brand and branding. We're also talking about how we work collectively as a team in order to actually get there, right? And that part is key. So we talk about sort of your website messaging, your newsletters to advertisers and prospects, how you show up at trade shows, how you tuck all of this into your presentation. Remember at the beginning of our teleseminar, we talked about a ball of string versus a strong, powerful burlap bag, right? That holds things. That's the distinction that we're talking about here, and these are the strategies. Let's tuck in a question from James, if we could. James in North Carolina, Jed asks, and this is specific to media bids, if you would. What is the best incentive, marketing, free information, discounts, so forth? Tell us a little bit. I know you've held this year, entire teleseminars on that. So James, and for all of you, we encourage you to go listen to Jed talk about this. But Jed, do you want to give us a little capsules about deals and offerings related to ads?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's a little hard to generalize because I think it's very specific on what is being sold. So, you know, almost universally though, you know, price is an enormous selling point. I mean, we find that you know, having a competitive price in an ad is perhaps the most important thing to generating, you know, a lot of response. I've used this example before, but I'll tell it again. You know, recently Dish Network increased the price of their service by about $5 a month, and the number of responses that were generated as after that fell by 50%. So by 50% of the 50% less responses as a result of a $5 per month increase, which ends up being about $60 a year, which means that when people were calling on the ad or deciding whether or not to call on the ad, they were aware of a historical price, which is a level of sort of consumer awareness that I certainly do not qualify for, right? I mean, it's pretty amazing that people watch that closely. One of the things that we find very often as it relates to price is that because responding to a print ad is such a considered action that you have time to look at the ad, to read the ad, in many cases to do research about the product or service that's being offered in an ad, that a higher price in a print ad can be an absolute death blow. Because I think what oftentimes happens is people will read the ad, they'll go online, They'll look at the product or service that's being offered doing whatever, you know, a Google search, and then they'll come back to the ad to respond to the ad if they feel that that what's being offered in the print ad, you know, offers a compelling set of buying reasons, right? Whether it's price, whether it's added incentives. So price is enormous. I mean, another thing that we see very often is companies that have success with adding things on. So you know, they'll say, you know, if you buy X, we'll give you Y, right? You know, so if you buy a month, we'll give you 3 months free. If you buy, you know, if you buy a package of steaks, we'll give you free potatoes, right? I mean, those types of things, I think, create a feeling among the consumer that they're really getting a good value. And really, that's what it boils down to when you're talking about any kind of direct response ad, whether it be local or national. If you're trying to get people to pick up the phone or to take a specific action, you have to give them a reason why. It has to have some degree of urgency. We have failed miserably with insurance ads. All right, we've never been successful with life, auto, home insurance ads, because those three categories are so dependent upon the consumer who's calling as to the price you're going to get, that the ad has never been able to hold any degree of urgency. We've never been able to make a case to someone who's reading a print ad, you should pick up the phone and call Allstate today because you could save money. You can't make any claims about how much money they could save, right? Because I don't know what kind of driver that person is. I don't know how old they are. I don't know where they live. I don't know any of these things that would qualify them for a better rate from Allstate. It may turn out that Allstate doesn't offer them a better rate. Right. So that's why, you know, that's just an example of a sort of a category of advertising that's really tough, I think, in print, because there's no reason why a consumer would respond to that, in any sort of, with any sort of, you know, degree of urgency.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And,
you know, there's a lot of tricks. I mean,
mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish. You said there's a lot of tricks, and go ahead.
No, there's a lot of tricks. I mean, you know, there's oftentimes with high price items, you know, for example, walk-in bathtubs, right? I mean, we do a lot of walk-in bathtubs, and they're very, very expensive. So those types of companies tend to offer a free information pack. Free information packs, by the way, I mean, on our last teleseminar with Physicians Mutual, they do free information packs for people who are interested in dental insurance, and they've been incredibly successful with it, because I think it takes a lot of the fear that people have about a response out of the equation. You know, the average person today, when they're responding to an ad, I think that what they're primarily worried about, if there's any downside, is that the company on the other end is going to keep calling them back, is going to harass them, is going to give them a hard time, right? So what Physicians Mutual does, and other companies do this as well, is they say, essentially, we're not going to bug you, right? But we're going to send you this information pack, and we're going to give you one phone call, you know, a week or two after you receive that information pack. So it's a simple thing. To call it an information pack is really sort of overstating it. It's basically a flyer, you know. It's not that much different than a lot of the things you receive in your mailbox. But I think it gives the consumer a degree safety, right, where they're able to say, okay, I'm not going to be pressured into making a purchase right now on the phone. I'm going to get some information, I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to make a decision. So information packs are a kind of a cheap way to try to build response as well.
Mm-hmm. So just to wrap that up, James, in North Carolina, it's a great question to you. We're hoping that this is helpful. Frankly, if you'd like to listen to and learn more about media bids, come in, reach out to Jed and their team. They have a wealth of knowledge on that side. As far as being able to come back and listen to any of our prior teleseminars, we've addressed this particular topic, and thank you so much. Just to wrap up, the fourth and final point, we just wanted to talk about sort of this media brand and how does it impact your bottom line profits, right? And the things that come from when our brand is strong, when the wind's at our back, when we're confident, when we're rocking, when we're generating the right results for the right advertisers with the right readership and all that's in alignment, the wind's at our back, it starts off by meaning less employee turnover. All that simply means is what? Your people are happy. You are happy. As a sales leader in your company, you're loving that your team is rocking and they're running down the hall, ringing the bell on an ongoing daily basis. I can remember being in sales meetings and looking up, seeing 50, 70, and 100 new full-page ads, Jed, when the norm was 5 and the norm was 7 and 10. So it was just this quantum leap. It was so much fun. And people don't want to leave that. And therefore, it also means that we're doing what? We're losing less ads, which means we have less former advertisers. Now, why am I calling that out? Because a former advertiser said goodbye, said you're fired, they're not coming back tomorrow or the next day or the next week or the next month or the next quarter. It might be 6 months to a year or more. And in some cases, they may be so unhappy with the ad results, it may be forever, all caps. And if you were ever to step into an ad, a media portfolio, and you look and go, oh, Anderson Jed, I've got 200 prospects I'm calling on, and I said the words, and we said the words, how many of those are former advertisers? And you said 150, we would gulp and say 150 of the 200 are former advertisers. That's a tough uphill road. Not insurmountable. It's a lot of work, and there's specific strategies for how to take a former advertiser and make them an advertiser, but we just want you to know that when your media brand is rock solid, when your team is having a ball, you're driving the results, the wind's at your back, you're outrunning your competitors, you maintain more of those advertisers. So if you had an 80 or 90 percentile of your renewals on an annual basis, you're only losing a small percentage. And that also means that you're also selling more prime placement. For some of you, it might be more front covers or page 2 or the back cover or centerfolds. For some of you, it might be page 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 17 have all been reserved in advance. Advertisers are fighting for placement. They're paying a premium for those pages. We also call that selling with scarcity, the topic of other teleseminars that we've held and run, which is another part of our winning strategy, which also means wink, wink, we're selling on our rate card. We are not discounting. We are not giving deals. And when you have competitors that are, those are the easiest competitors to shred, subject of other prior teleseminars. These are big strategies, but just know for the moment that competitors that are discounting are the easiest competitors. Frankly, the ones that are selling from their brand, selling from their thought leadership, that are not discounting, that have 26 premium patients in place, those are your toughest competitors, not the ones that are saying, I'll give you a special price. Okay? So, in summary, your brand matters, your branding matters, right? And everything that you do has to be in full alignment from your sales presentation, your media marketing, your newsletter, your website, the way that you're involved in the community, your association involvement, all of those pieces are like that burlap bag. Weave it all together. It's strong and powerful and dynamic. Unravel one of those strings on that burlap bag, and you roll right back to a ball of string. Weak, on the defensive, and not nearly getting the impact that you want and you hope. Okay? So, Jed, as always, as we come up to the top of the hour, how about some closing words related to our topic here, and we'll finish smartly right at the top of the hour like we promised.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ernest. We covered a lot of ground. I think we got some good ideas for future teleseminars as well, which is always nice. Thanks to everyone who joined us. It's always fun to hear your questions. If you have any follow-up questions, or there's any more information that that I can provide or add to, we're always happy to do that. So please feel free to reach out to us.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And Jed, always a pleasure working here together. To each of you and all of you, come into Media Bids to learn what they do. For those of you who are already working with them, the value they bring and the insight. For those of you that have not, come in and they will share with you and show you their wisdom. And then likewise, if you'd like to learn more of the work we do within the media sales space, come into powerhour.com, and we'd be delighted to talk to you about the things that we're working on here. Jed, always a pleasure. See you next month. Always a delight to be working together, okay?
Yeah. Great. Thank you. And thanks, Ernest. And thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Thanks, Jed.